Welcome back to the Perth Business Podcast.
I'm Taryn, the host of the podcast, networking with the best in Perth over a bev when the best stories tend to emerge. So grab a cup of coffee or settle in for the drive to work or to the gym and enjoy. Make sure you give us your thoughts online at Instagram, Facebook or LinkedIn and hit that little subscribe button to make sure you get our episodes every week.
I'd also like to acknowledge and voice my appreciation for being able to record this podcast on Whadjuk Booja, Perthland, and be able to pay my respects to the Noongar ancestors and elders who are the traditional owners of this country.
Without further ado, here's our next guest.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Taryn. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be doing your podcast.
I'm so excited to interview you. Thank you so much for sharing beer with me again.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, again.
Yeah, again. How crazy.
After Berlin.
Yep. Berlin meetup, like, what was that super impromptu, just running the marathon as you do,
I know. Well, like, I guess the backstory is that, like, I had never met a podcaster that uses the hen house.
Because
when I launched the studio, I moved back to New York, like, 3 days after we launched the studio, and we hadn't had a podcast booking at that point.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, all me.
Yeah, then you reached out, you're like, hey, I'm in Berlin. And I'm like, hey, you're a power user of the Hen House podcast studio.
A power user, I love that. Yeah.
I was like, fantastic, because I'm going to ask you a million questions you don't even know about it yet.
Yeah.
And so, after the marathon, you know, we were able to catch up, grab a few drinks, you met all my running buddies.
That was awesome.
And, I could pepper you with all the questions about the podcast.
Yeah. You were probably like, why'd she go so quiet? I'm in Berlin having the best time of my life.
Yeah. it was great, wasn't it?
Nice. It was awesome.
Really,
yeah.
Really cool. So, yeah, and now I must have done something right because I'm on your podcast.
Well, I want to know more. I guess we just didn't chatter enough over in Berlin. That was awesome. That was incredible. And what a feat to, like, I don't even know how people – I want to get inside your head because, first of all, for me, running a marathon, I feel like you either – are a great person with aspirations and all these dreams, or you hate yourself.
Yes.
And I want to know which one it is.
I don't hate myself. That's good.
Good to hear.
No, I started running when I was 30, and I've got to thank my buddies Timmy and Justin. They bought me a Garmin watch. I just started running with them a little bit, and they bought me a Garmin watch. And at that point, I was running like 2 or 3 kilometres, and just the gamification of like running 3 kilometres at trying to run 5 minutes a kilometre pace. And then, you know, 2 days later, running 4 kilometres, 5 kilometres, and just building it up. And I built it up over like 6 months.
Yeah.
I did a half marathon in like 2011.
Wow.
And then I did the marathon in 2012, for New York Marathon, when we first moved to New York.
Yeah.
And, it was great. It was like just a challenge. It was like, going to do it once, bucket list, New York Marathon, greatest marathon in the world, and then I'll never do it again.
Yeah.
I ran the marathon, and I was like, fantastic, tick, it's off the bucket list.
Yep.
Always nice to accomplish those big goals.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll never do it again.
Yeah.
And then, but I kind of missed it, you know, because the training and everything, it is like so much of it is the mind aspect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the physical aspect,
but
it's such a great challenge running a marathon. Mm. And then, like, I try to run it for time, so, like, tried to do a 3-hour 30 marathon in 2012.
Wow.
And then I was aiming for a 3:25 in 2017, which I got.
Yep.
And then I was aiming for a 3:30 in Berlin, but my calf muscle conked out. So
it was
like 3:43. But it doesn't matter.
That's pretty good. That's only 13 minutes over.
Yeah, it's still fine. But I highly recommend. And I really think, like, everyone should, if they can, you know, because it's a big physical undertaking, give it a shot.
Yeah,
if they can. It's good fun.
Yeah, speaking to some of your friends, I was saying, I really feel like it takes two different types of people to be a runner, like people who are dedicated, they do it for the enjoyment, but also the challenge, the motivation, trying to break records.
Yeah.
And I love how you said gamification, because that is a huge thing in every aspect of, you know, how we try to engage people in the community right now as marketers, as business owners.
Massively.
Hugely. It's got to be entertaining. It's got to be fun.
I am all for that. In fact, you wouldn't have seen this yet because you just walked in.
Yeah.
But on around the corner where the storeroom here is at the hen house, we have – it's called the Wall of Fame. We've just updated it.
Oh,
and
yay.
Part of the gamification there is when you've done 50 rehearsals, you go up there.
Oh, cool.
And we redo it each year. So we have 50, 100, 150, 200, 400 plus. And so every year for the last 7 years, we update that with the bands.
Yep.
And then we'll do a social media post and we'll tag as many of those bands in as we can.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
We'll be like, new Hen House Wall of Fame is up. Congratulations to all the bands making 50 for the first time.
Yeah.
We'll do a few special mentions if, like, a band has gone into the 200 or 400.
Yep.
Gamification.
Yeah, level
marketing,
up.
Marketing, yeah.
Love it. So. And it keeps, like, that progression, sort of keeping track of how people are engaging with your business, but not from a really pushy salesy perspective.
Yeah, it's nice.
I love that. I love how you guys do stuff. So before we dive into the hen house and the future plans for it and how you rose to success, well, my eyes, success, and where you are at the moment.
I'll take it.
I mean, you're expanding. We've got a video recorder here. The success of my books.
That's a start, isn't it? We've got a colourful background. Didn't have that 2 weeks ago.
How do you know blue was my colour? I love it. can we talk more about you? So,
sure.
I love that I had no idea you're from Johannesburg as well, in South Africa, because we both don't have the accent. Just out here bumping into each other. Like it's crazy. Not even in Australia, not in South Africa, in Berlin, of all places. So what age did you come to Australia and sort of how was that transition for you as, you know, as a part of your development as a human being?
Yeah, so my family immigrated to Australia in 1987 and it was like to this day it's like the thing I'm most grateful for my parents doing.
Yeah, I feel that.
I'm like eternally grateful. And I thank them all the time because I feel like, you know, I guess we'll get to this, but they've moved back to South Africa like 18 years ago. And so I go back quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I just think we're so lucky to live in Australia. South Africa's got a lot of good qualities, but there's a lot that's really wrong with it. I feel like I wouldn't have had the life I've had if my parents didn't make that very selfless decision to move to Australia. Because they're actually doing quite well in South Africa. My dad had his own businesses.
Oh, right.
But they were just really fearful of what the future would hold for their child, their children, me and my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they made that decision. And they really gave up a lot. Because back then, like the rand to the dollar was really bad.
Yeah.
They had to do all sorts of things to get their money out of South Africa to get it into Australia.
Yeah.
So I think it's had a huge impact on maybe sort of – probably not that I thought about it so much until I got a bit older.
Mm-hmm.
But I think seeing how hard they worked to like create a future for me to be able to put me into like Chisholm College, private school, you know, even though we grew up in like, you know, very simple, great house in Morley, like, you know, but, you know, they had to work hard to be able to do stuff like that.
Yeah, it's
and
not
so
easy.
I think that probably there is some sort of like learning via osmosis that happens when you have like parents that are like, immigrants, they have to make all new friends. They've got no family here. It's just your own little unit of me, my mum, my dad. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely had an impact on my life. I'm super grateful to them. And what's been really nice in the last few years is like as a way to be able to thank them, he's doing some trips traveling with them. Just, yeah, like they get to share in successes, whether it be like personal successes or relationships or business or whatever. And Oh, Peter and Linda, they're wonderful people.
Shout out to Peter and Linda. I love
it. Peter and Linda.
And you're a bit of a globetrotter as well now. I feel like I definitely can resonate with that. Like my family is all over Australia now.
Yep.
Even though we relocated as a, you know, as a family of four to Victoria and then Queensland and now Perth, we've all kind of dissipated across the lands as you do like other family follows. And I don't know, I feel like it just gives you like a confidence to be able to relocate, sort of reinstate yourself into a community and I think to build networks and communities quite effectively.
Oh, spot
and that's
on.
It's quite blanket, you know, that's a blanket statement.
Oh, but you verbalized that so well. That's so true.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really think of it like that. But you're right. I mean, I ended up moving to the US and living over there.
Yeah.
And doing a similar thing. And actually when I worked that all out, it was a very similar age to when my parents were doing it.
Right.
So we're now back in Australia, but we did spend the better part of 8 years in the US. And
so what were you doing in the US?
Well, we moved, my wife and I moved there in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, I just finished building the second hen house.
Oh, yeah. So do we go back to the beginning?
We can go wherever you want.
So I was speaking to Luke Whelan from Perth Is Okay, who we've had on the podcast before.
Yes.
And I was gushing about this interview because I was so excited for it.
Okay. I loved his interview, by the way.
Yeah, it was
yes,
good.
I've never met him.
Best performing interview so far.
Yeah,
well, we'll tee that up because I'll have him back, actually.
Yeah.
Because he said the first band he really, really loved, and he sort of built the band scene in Perth a little
bit.
Big
time.
Yeah, massive strides, was Gyroscope. So,
wow, that is so lovely.
It's crazy. If only we knew someone who had some backstory.
Yeah.
On
that. No, well, that's right. Yeah. Well, I was the drummer in Gyroscope.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. No, I mean, gosh, Gyroscope, like, I mean, I was in Gyroscope for 23 years, which is crazy when I say it out loud because I really go, wow, 23 years. But
yeah.
I did start it quite young.
I was going to say, you must have been quite young when you started.
So Zoran, the guitarist, and I started Gyroscope, like, at the very beginning in 1996 when we were 15.
Yep.
And then, you know, shortly, like 6 months later, we got Dan in the band. 6 months later, we got Brad in the band. Yeah. And then that was the four of us for like the next 23 years.
Incredible.
Yeah, we just, I mean, it was one of those things that starts off like so many bands do here at the studio, right? It's just like you love music, you started learning an instrument, you want to get into a band and you want to write songs. Yeah. And so we started doing that. And it was crazy because I actually had bought a drum kit, but I couldn't play it. And Zoc, who was, we had a mutual friend in the neighborhood who where I used to play cricket in his backyard, David McCullough. And he introduced me. He told Zoc, hey, the guy down the road's got a drum set. You want to start a band, you should call him. And then Zoc called me.
Yeah.
And then that weekend he came over and I'm like, look, great, man. I'm all about starting a band. I can't play drums. He goes, don't worry about it. I'll teach you how to play. I can play drums. He's a guitarist. And he taught me for the first like 6 months. So the thing about Gyroscope that sometimes just spins me out is like we started at the absolute ground zero where like, you know, the first songs any of us ever wrote were together as a band and just learning how to play our instruments. Dan wasn't even a lead singer. He was just the rhythm guitarist.
Wow,
he
then
became the lead singer as he developed. And it took an awfully long time, but we were actually able to like develop a career.
Yeah. That's so incredible. Yeah. And what a feat to like, I think it's like a testament to the consistency and commitment to stick with it, you know, and to grow it because I imagine, and I've done my fair share of docos on Netflix of, you know, I don't know, your 8 miles and all that sort of thing.
You are a professional.
I'm a professional knowledge absorber.
Yes.
And it's so crazy how up and down and how hard it really is to like not just put yourself forward and learn the things, but learn the industry and grow with the audiences and your fans and your band members and the little community and family that you build that becomes a huge community and family.
Yes.
You know, so I feel like that would have been super challenging.
Oh, so
Do you want to talk a bit to that before we go into how you started?
Absolutely. The Hen House? No, totally. I mean, I feel like that Gyroscope thing, boy, we could just, we could amble on that forever. Like, because it is kind of amazing with Gyroscope that we really didn't have any sort of success really for the first five years.
Yeah.
And we actually worked really hard in that 5 years. So two of that was when we were still at high school, but we had a policy of rehearsing twice a week and we were still playing gigs around Perth and one of our parents would come to the gig and escort us to the gig so that we could be in a licensed venue. I mean, I remember we supported Jebediah the day before the year 12 T-E-R or S or whatever it's called
days. Yeah.
The big maths exam
in
grade 12. It was like a big deal because Jebediah was our favorite band, but it was the big exam the next day. So, but our parents still let us play it. To then, you know, as the songs got better, very slowly our profile built in WA. And it really wouldn't have been until like we started writing songs. We had a little break in 2001. We came back from that break. We started writing much better songs. I think the break did us some good.
Yeah.
And then eventually in 2002, we got signed by a cool independent label.
Yeah.
Triple J played like one of our songs like three or four times.
And score.
It was just this like little bit of a glimmer out there and we're like, could something be happening here?
Yeah.
And it was funny because like really the only people that ever came to our shows were our friends and even they stopped coming after 5 years, which was totally fair enough.
guys.
And so then there was like a period, it was like we actually wrote a song and it was actually in the room next door, podcast studio next door. We wrote a song called Doctor Doctor, which if you go to Spotify, you can listen to Doctor Doctor.
Yeah.
And we wrote that song in half an hour and it was the quickest we'd ever written a song. And we all walked into the foyer out here and we were all like quiet. And then Brad was like, that's either really good or maybe it's really bad. And I was like, dude, I think it's good. And Zoc and Dan were like, man, we think it's really good. And then we played it for the first time like 2 or 3 weeks later and we're supporting Jimmy Eat World at Magnet House now.
Yep.
It, and people after the show were like, you know, the blonde hair is always a bit of a beacon. Yep. They're like, hey, man, you're in Gyroscope, right? And I'll be like, yeah, that Doctor Doctor song, that's a cool song. I remember like walking from when I'd packed up my drums to get to my buddies who are at the very back.
Yep.
Like four people stopped to say, hey, that Doctor Doctor song is really good.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I think we've just written our first like good song.
Yeah.
It's taken 5 years, but I think this could be what happens when you write good songs.
Yep.
And then, yeah, like 6 months later, Triple J put it on high rotation. We signed a record deal. Awesome. We started touring and the wheels were in motion. And then really from like 2003, we started 2003, when we were getting signed, we had like a record deal offer. We negotiated it. We're like, okay, we're signing a major label deal. Huge event. Like we'd been going since we were 15. Like I'd gone to uni and done a degree. I'd finished the degree. I was doing honors.
Oh my gosh.
And deferred that. Yep. And we were actually down here because we had a permanent room where we would rehearse.
Yep.
We're like, you know what, boys, this is a big moment. We've got to take it. Let's quit all our jobs. Let's like defer uni. Let's just do everything. Yep. Let's go to Morley Centrelink. We went to Morley Centrelink. We signed up for the Dole.
Yeah.
And then we just came down here every day and we wrote our first album. And then things started to keep getting bigger. Yeah. We wrote our second, third, fourth. And yeah, we spent the next, I guess, from 2003 to 2012, writing, releasing, recording albums, touring around Australia. We were lucky enough to record albums in Los Angeles, London.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible, Wales. Man.
Yeah, I was really so grateful. I mean, I look back on that period of my life, really from like 2002 to 2012, and I'm just like so grateful.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful to the other guys in the band as well, because you really can't do it unless everyone's pulling their weight.
Completely,
and
yeah.
Like, I'm best mates with those guys still. Like, Zoc is the builder that did all the renovations here.
Oh,
every
wow.
aspect of it, from putting the ceilings up to the stuff that's on these walls here.
Yeah.
And Brad's the electrician for the hen house. You know, Dan's a stay-at-home dad who's like very committed to his family, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Yeah.
So even though I left Gyroscope in 2019,
yep.
I did one final tour with them. It was wonderful. The final show we played together as the four of us was like one of my favorite shows ever.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite show ever.
Yeah.
So like, it's such a fairy tale, that whole Gyroscope thing. And still today I meet people that like will come up to me, not so much, not in the US, but here in Perth and in Melbourne a little bit, like that'll just be like, hey, man, loved
you
your band.
Guy? Yeah.
You're the blonde drummer guy.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, yeah. They're like, yeah, man, really loved your band. Or it's really nice that something that I got so much joy out of, like criminal amount of joy and fun, and see the world and travel, you know, it's criminal that, you know, that other people got joy out of it. And I get rewarded and lauded in a small way for
criminal,
that.
Well deserved.
Yeah, no. And that's it. I do feel like it was well deserved. That's right.
Yes.
It was well deserved because we worked really hard and all four of us really put in the efforts. And so I'm so proud of those guys as well. You
that
know?
Commitment and the kinship that you would have had as a team, as a little family, as a band, like that would have kept you going, because people give up on things so quickly, and it is, you know, it might be because it's not the right feel, not the right fit, or someone can't commit. You know, financial things, like that sort of thing. Yeah. We're so lucky in Australia to have Centrelink.
Oh, totally. Shout out to Ricky Cooling, if he's listening, my Dole officer, who when I was about to get kicked off, we had a 7-week tour supporting the Living End. It was around all of Australia, and we had been on the Dole for probably a year by that stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were looking for jobs and we were trying to make it all work whilst we were touring, like, you know.
Mm.
But you also can't, you know, pull the piss for too long.
Mm.
And we were getting to the end of that. And I just said to like Ricky Cooling, who was the Dole officer, who was really great actually.
Mm.
I was just like, look, I know I've been on here for a while, but my band's like on the cusp of doing something.
Yeah.
Like, we are working super hard. We have like a permanent studio in Osborne Park.
Mm-hmm.
We've got this tour, we've got that tour, we're doing this. And he's like, yeah, man, I've been hearing you guys on Triple J. I like your music. I can tell it's happening.
Oh.
He's like, I'll let it go. You know, but this, you know, can't go on forever.
Yeah.
And he did. He let it keep going for like another 6 months.
Oh my
and
gosh,
then we eventually signed a publishing deal.
Yeah.
And then the money we got from that publishing deal paid us all like a wage of $250 a week from like 2004, 2005, 2006. So for those 3 years, we weren't on the Dole anymore. We were able to tour full time. We had a basic wage of $250 bucks a week.
Just to get by, yep.
Here I am burping into the microphone. Real classy. Real classy. And,
hey, we like to keep it casual here. I love it.
Oh, it's casual.
Shout out to Ricky. And what a name, by the way.
Ricky Cooling.
I thought you were going to say something. He went off and started his own band or
you know,
something.
You know, I actually sometimes think about Ricky because I like, you know, there's these little moments in life where like people just do you a solid.
Yeah.
For no real reason. They have to bend the rules a little bit.
Yeah.
When we signed that publishing deal, I went in to say, hey, we're signing a publishing deal.
Yeah.
I'm getting off the Dole next week. Thank you for the last 18 months. You've been so good to me. I really appreciate you and just wish you all the best. That was it. But if you go, I mean, if someone's got a copy of our debut album, Sound Shattering Sound, we all thank Centrelink and I thank Ricky Cooling in there. So
in particular,
if he's listening, send me a message, Ricky.
Yeah, love to reconnect. Come on the potty, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wicked.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's just, you know, we such a great bunch of guys. I can't reiterate that enough. You know,
yeah.
Makes all the difference. I think if you've got people you can work with, whatever business you're doing, like,
yeah,
get along with and have fun as well.
Yeah. So have you used the uni degree since?
Well, I like to tell myself I use it every day because it was marketing and advertising. So it was BCom.
Oh, there you go.
And I do feel like that's the thing that like has helped me the most. I think like what I've seen, I mean, this is just like here's a general statement. Mm. Feel free to chime in.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be interested in your thoughts on this. Is, you know, there's a lot of brave people that start businesses. And I think that's like actually the hardest step sometimes is to start a business. Like,
oh, yeah.
Brave decision because you've got to forego things and it's not natural, I think, for a lot of people. But then I think what separates the people that maybe succeed more than others is that marketing nous, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm really grateful to have that like baseline. So I kind of use it in Gyroscope as well through like our branding, you know, marketing, merchandise, the way we built our band up. But I think I've been able to use it a lot in this business.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is that?
Yeah. No, well, I think the thing that sets business owners apart from non-business owners, I suppose, they are naturally problem solvers. So whether it's a gap in the market, whether it is something that they're currently using in terms of service or product and they think they could do it better, it's always there's a problem, we can solve it. And they enjoy the process of starting a business because it's challenge after challenge, problem after problem to be solved. And that's the fun part, right?
Yeah.
If it was easy, everyone would do it.
That's right.
And I think it's so interesting because I've spoken to marketers, non-marketers, like performers, people that start businesses because it's a necessity, people who start passion projects because they really want to give something a go and just see how they do it.
Sure.
There is a big difference between those who are marketers and those that are not. So, for example, the hairdressers that I've, you know, I've interviewed a couple of hairdressers who are, you know, on the side, they're building or developing Ape the Label, for example. They do aprons.
Yeah.
So she's a hairdresser. She started a hairdressing salon and then she kind of started the trend of blonde specialist hairdressers in Perth. Wow. Wow. And now she's doing aprons to preserve sort of, there's a whole
I didn't know that was I didn't know that was
a
niche.
It's a blonde, fashion thing as well.
Blonde specific hairdressers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I should go there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. you would thrive in her seat.
not a lot of men in there, but I'll thrive anyway.
Yeah, shout out to Ape the Label and Boho Blonde. But
It's
funny because when I interviewed her, I interviewed her partner who, like business partner, who is a marketing specialist.
Okay.
So she's the ideas lady.
Yes.
She, you know, has the follow through. She's like, no, I just know that this will work. She obviously knows her audience really well. I found the difference between marketers who do the research into the audiences versus the business owners who kind of sometimes are the audience or have seen the audience.
Yes.
They have the ideas for the product and the services, and the marketers are just like the go guys, the guys that get things going. They implement. They see things through. They follow through and see it to fruition because that's what they're trained in.
Yes.
And from my perspective, I feel like it's such a transferable skill. But once you've been in the industry for a bit or you've seen how it works and you just get it, it clicks, you're like, why don't I assist someone who's got a business or a startup, or you do it yourself?
Yeah.
It's either that or you know, get comfy in a corporate role, which is fine as well. You know, there's places for that for individuals who specialize in
totally,
that and need
course.
That.
Of course,
they
can do
that.
Very well.
Yeah.
More security as well. And that can be a great way to do it.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. I think the marketing side of things, it is, I don't know if secret sauce is too strong a word, but it's just vital to the long-term health of a business.
Yeah.
Because I've seen in this business, which I've had for 12 years now, it's like it has ebbed and flowed. There's been good times. There's been dark times.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, it's also hard to motivate to keep up the marketing efforts but yeah, super important.
Yeah. Consistency with marketing, I think, is probably the most challenging thing because the economy and the landscapes are changing so often.
Well, exactly.
And drastically.
Well, what works now might not be working in 2 years' time.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to keep doing what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
The harder part is pushing yourself, which is why I love podcasts so much.
Yeah.
And why your podcast is so great. Because you listen to people, you know, pry out these ideas and it's very inspiring.
Yeah. It's really, I love hearing the stories because it is like the storytelling aspect of a business owner's personality. Like if they can tell their story, that is so helpful, that value in that story, in those challenges in particular, saying, for example, if you didn't have anyone to help you with the building or anything, how was the process to find that person? If that was the most challenging thing about building a rehearsal studio, because someone else is going to resonate with that.
Sure.
For example. So you were in Gyroscope, you had that whole journey.
Yeah.
developed a community, a little family.
Yes.
You rehearsed here at the Hen House Studios before it was yours.
Yes, it was called R&R.
Ah.
It was built in 1988,
yep.
This space.
Yep.
It was built in 1988. We came here in 1999 because mm-hmm. our studio in Bayswater shut down. We needed a new studio, Soundworks, rest in peace. And and we came here and we loved it straight away because it's like an interesting setup here. We've got this like little quadrangle, you know, and all the school rooms like feed onto the quadrangle. So actually when we started rehearsing here, we told our friends in bands, there was like a band called Time's Up, there's another one called Waste of Space, Ballpoint. We'd be like, yeah, we rehearse Tuesdays and Thursdays. You guys should rehearse here too.
Mm.
And everyone would come down, we'd hang out, we'd have a beer, we'd eat some chips.
Yep.
Everyone would go into each other's rooms, listen to music, and we loved it. And then when we started touring and getting busier, I eventually said to Mike, the owner here, I was like, hey, Mike, in between touring, maybe I can come do a few shifts here, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't really trust anyone. And I'm like, you can trust me.
Yeah.
Come on. I've been here for years. I'm a nice guy. Come on, give it a shot.
We haven't wrecked the place yet.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, but how would we do it? And I was like, well, I'll collect the cash. You live in Subiaco. I live in Subiaco. I'll bring the cash straight from thing, straight to you.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, you've got a record on SMS. Everyone SMSs their bookings in, you know, text. Here I am, SMS.
Yeah.
Taking it old school.
Oh, it's still, and, we still use SMS. Yeah.
And he's like, okay, we'll try it.
Yeah.
Because like he just hadn't occurred to him that you could run a process with someone. And yeah, so I ended up working here for like 7 years. Doing all the odds and jobs
for
R&R Studios, you know, putting up with all the bands who would be complaining about only one microphone in the room.
Yeah.
They're like, Rob, we need a second one. You know, we have a backing vocalist. I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. We've got eight rooms to get eight microphones.
Yeah.
Like, then they'd be like, can you call Mike? Can you ask him? And but Mike was busy. He had backpackers. He had other businesses. This was pretty low profile for him. And
right.
after getting in his ear for years and just seeing, like, I felt like I knew a lot about rehearsal studios at that point.
Yeah.
Because I'd worked here for 7 years.
Expert
I'd rehearsed
level.
Here for 11 years. You know, I'd been in a band. My band was sort of having success. And I was also just like thinking about this like concept around, isn't it crazy that like in our case, four guys walk into a room and half an hour later they walk out of that room with a song, Doctor, mm-hmm. Doctor. And then 6 months later that song is getting played on Triple J, which that means you're getting invited to play at Splendor in the Grass, which then means you're getting asked to support Blink 182 on their Australian
huge.
Tour in 2004. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All because four guys accessed this level of creativity within themselves and wrote this song and walked out.
Yeah.
And so for me, like a rehearsal studio, it's got this kind of like mystical power.
Yeah. You walk and in, you come out like.
Yeah. Because you don't know what you're going to create in here.
Yeah.
That like that, what you're creating here could like, it could actually change your life.
Yeah.
Might not be just that, you know, it could be because you could write this gigantic song. But I've always like loved the romance of that.
Yeah. And
so
it's situational.
I try and encourage that with like bands, you know. Our slogan for a long time was the dream begins here, which is very like high and mighty.
Love it.
Early marketing concepts.
Yeah. You've got to try it. It's
could
AMB
have
testing.
That better.
Yeah.
But anyway, the dream begins here. And it was just that idea of like, you know, like this is a great place. And so then like, you know, when you start like drilling into that thought, you know, then when I bought it, the first thing I did was I painted the whole place white because at the time it was all black. And so I was just like, I just want to change it up. I want to lighten the mood. I want to put murals in the rooms. You know, I want to tighten up the branding. I wanted to make, I want to make it feel really great so that when people come here after working all day, like I used to work at Myers Galleria back in the day and I'd come straight from the galas straight here on a Thursday for my rehearsal after working all day. And I'd be like, oh, this is, I just loved coming here. And that's when it was a dump.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of, I guess, the root ethos behind what's become the Hen House. So I bought it in 2010.
Yep.
Mike eventually sold it to me. And then it was I was really busy with Gyroscope at that point in time. You know, we had a song that was doing really well at radio. We were touring. I think I bought it on the 1st of May 2010. And I think we released our fourth album like maybe a month before or a month after it. So we're touring lots.
Damn.
Which was great because it sort of forced my hand to like get the systems and processes where I had people working down here when I was on tour for 4 weeks. There was no like time.
Yeah, you couldn't be two places at once. Yeah.
So really I had to learn to take myself out of the business quite quickly, which was very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started building the Hen House up and I think it was fortunate, you know, that Gyroscope was doing really well at that moment in time. And because I had been here for 7 years, I knew all the bands that had come and gone.
Yeah.
But were still around.
You were the guy.
So I literally just like called them, texted them, emailed them, MySpaced them, whatever the hot social media was at the time.
You're on my top friends list. Yeah. Can you come check out my studio? Yeah. Thank you. And if anyone's been here, the murals are incredible. Like, it's just a little touch of something different. It's a great backdrop for photos, but it's also very much like you walk in and everyone that hasn't been here before says to me, they're like, wow, this is really cool. Like, I don't know what they were expecting. I was inviting them to like a dingy little basement. Maybe. Perhaps. If you listen to the first episodes of the podcast, they were recorded in dingy little spaces and on a phone and that sort of thing. So having a studio and people hearing the word studio and thinking radio booth studio, like whatever people do in their private recording spaces, something for bands is just a little bit more edgy, I feel. Like, it's got the energy as well. So occasionally we like hear people rehearsing before we come into the rooms and it's just such a vibe, man. Yeah, and they come out and they're like, they look really like stoked with whatever they've created, the next doctor or whatever it is. Or they're coming in, and you mentioned before you had the culture of, you know, chilling out with your friends before or after having some, you know, some food, drinks.
Yeah, yeah.
And you still do that.
Oh, we still do it. We do it every Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. So we do a free beer and free barbecue. Shout out Feral Brewing. Don't look at this brand here.
Damn it. Should have been more prepared.
Shout out Feral Brewing. They sponsored us for 6 years.
Yeah, incredible.
They give us lots of free beer and we also pay for some of it. We give away. Everyone that rehearses books in on a Saturday, Sunday, we do a free barbecue, free beers for everyone. Mm-hmm. So everyone gets a beer, everyone gets a barbecue snag. We've been doing it since 2004. And then whoever's cooking the barbecue is the conduit of like trying to introduce bands to bands, because we know the different bands.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, Timmy, why don't you meet Justo? You guys, like, you're in a punk rock band, he's in a punk rock band. Hey, you know, so.
Yeah, friends.
Yeah. So, you know, the community aspect's really big to what we do, you know. So, like, you know, the beers and the barbecue, it's a simple thing we can do. That's marketing dollars we spend on obviously doing that, because we do it, you know, every weekend per year. So we give away a lot of booze and food. But that's marketing spend that I would rather be putting money into and drilling into that community aspect. And we have bands that religiously rehearse with us and they love it. I mean, like, I was doing the barbecue shift on Saturday, which I hadn't done for a couple of years because I've been living away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was running around trying to do things and I just wasn't on my A game because it's been a while. And the bands, we usually serve at 2 p.m. The bands came out a couple of times and I was like, sorry, guys, I'll come get you as soon as it's ready. So they love it. And it's been great. And I definitely think it's a feature of what we do down here. You know, we throw a party every year. You know, this upcoming Saturday.
I was going to say, anniversary.
12th birthday party.
Birthday, so exciting.
You know, shout out to Feral Brewing for the 30 cartons of free beer.
Oh, I'm so sad to be missing out because I'm going to be down south.
Yep.
I cried a few tears.
Oh, are you? You're not going to be out.
I know.
Cancel the trip.
Tom must have hid that information from you because I got the text and I was like, what a joke. Guys.
Well, it's always fun. What we do is we put two secret bands on. We don't tell who the bands are. Oh, and then we have a secret DJ this year as well. And then, we have a really great time.
Yeah, I bet.
So that's like another thing we do. It's like a big way for the podcasters to meet the DJs, the bands to meet the recording, vice versa, and for all of us to hang out and just have a fun night and just like revel in the fact that like we are all creating something.
Yeah.
Whether it's a podcast or you're DJing.
Yeah.
You know, like for me these days, my creativity is that my outlet is this studio. It's like thinking of ways to make this studio better. It's like this podcast studio. This is like the first day we've been in this podcast studio with a new podcast desk.
Schmick setup.
Yeah, collaborating with my friend Matt, you know, to think about how we light podcasts, how we can make it good for video, how we can have interesting backgrounds.
Yeah.
So like that's my creativity now, but I just love being around creative people.
Yeah.
And so that's what's so nice about the Hen House is now with the podcast DJ recording, we've got such a diverse group of people.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I was going to say it's better than the old way of networking that I still do, which is stalking the podcasters in the car park.
Yes. You did do that.
I've met a couple, in the car park here at the Hen House. So shout out to the car park.
It's cool.
It's a great space to be. But
And
then, also like it helps the like creative energy that you bring to the studio and even the opportunity like this to have the podcast filmed in a proper setup and room.
Yeah.
Gives my podcast more credit. It gives me more ideas and I'm more ambition to then be able to, you know, level up so that I can now start filming my podcast, you know, independently of this trial period. So that's what I love that ideas, creativity coming together and feeding off each other in that way.
Yeah. I think there's like a really important, like, you know, because obviously I know it's like, you know, Perth Business Podcast. Like, I'm trying to bring it back to business. I just, but I think there's like a really important ethos that I'm really trying to work on now that I think I let go of it a little bit between the years of like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And that is that I constantly want to keep improving the studio. So like this podcast studio has been running for about 18 months. Mm-hmm. And so now we've totally redone the podcast studio, you know, new boom, low profile boom arms, the new table with the more fronts on set up, the lights, just to try keep improving and keep growing what we have down here. Mm. Like not really trying very hard to not like rest on our laurels, because I think I got a bit complacent for a period of time. I was also busy with other things, but also when you do that, it like renews your energy for the business. So I've really enjoyed working with Matt Woolley, who is filming all of this today.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed working with him first on the DJ studios, mate and Kat, who gave me so much advice around, because I knew nothing about DJ studios.
Yeah. So so interesting.
I still don't.
Yeah.
Just leave it to the expert. Someone asked me to help them the other day and I was like,
I'm going to do my best here.
I was like, well, that's the master switch there.
This is the door.
It was quite funny, but I am enjoying the hen house right now more than I've ever enjoyed it, because there's so many creative things we can keep trying.
Yeah. And it's the little things that make a difference, like the microphones. I've been to 3 different podcast studios aside from Hen House in Perth, and I've only been to each of them once, and I did not like any of them as much as this. It's the seats, it's the equipment and how easy it is to use. You guys had like that tutorial on how to use the whole Rodecaster when I had no idea. You know, I kind of go into the interview being like, I know how to press record. Sure. I don't know how to record an intro or what I'm actually meant to be checking on the sound levels, because I don't have a background in that. I have a background in marketing.
Yeah, totally.
Technology, kind of interested in it, but I'm not going to take stuff apart and figure it out.
Yeah.
That's just not where my passions lie. Makes a huge difference. You said before, business-wise, this has been your project and it's been, I think, a very worthwhile investment. But you also support the artists in another way. So can we talk a little bit more about how you or who you're looking after at the moment in terms of like record deals and promoting?
Band management, So, I mean, I guess, you know, I was really trying to find like the next thing for a while there, probably in like 2015, 16. I'd lived in New York for 2 years, had moved back to Perth. And then I was like, okay, like, you know, maybe I'll do a co-working space. Maybe I'll do another rehearsal studio south of the river, you know. But by that point, a lot of rehearsal studios have popped up.
Yeah.
And I was really trying to find that next thing. And then actually there was a band rehearsing down here at the Hen House in 2015 in room 17. And
that memory.
Spot on. Well, it was just so weird because, you know, back then the way it would work is we'd collect the cash or tap, you know, take card payment. And so I got to the door and they were playing a song. And I thought, God, this guy's got such a good voice. Wow, this is amazing. Listened to the song, knocked on the door, popped my head in. And it was a band called The Fame who were rehearsing there, who I'd never heard of. And I was like, guys, that's great.
Yeah.
You're so young. Like in my head, they sounded like they were like 23, 24, but they were all 17, 18. They're like, oh, yeah, well, you're Rob, aren't you? You're the owner. I'm like, yeah. Like, we've been rehearsing here to meet you. And I'm like, I mean, great. Like, I don't know if it was true.
I'm just going to like keep the smile.
Yeah.
Like,
wow, but it's a great way to get your attention.
Yeah.
It's like, meet me.
That
I'll
ego
stop
just...
it. Carry on.
One more time.
Yeah, that was me, wasn't it? Yeah. So it was pretty funny. They played a couple of songs. They were just like, yeah, we know you're in Gyroscope. Mm-hmm. You signed a record deal. We want to sign a record deal. Can we play your song? They played me a couple of songs. It was good. You know, it was like pop punk. It was fine.
Yep.
But like they were really nice guys. You know, Steven, the bass player, tried to do like this like pop punk jump and then landed funny and almost tripped over. It was very endearing.
Yeah,
it was all very endearing. And then they were like, talk. I'm like, lads, I'm going to go meet my girlfriend at the time, now wife, for dinner. Here's my number. If you want to meet up for coffee, you know, shoot me a message.
Yeah, and they would have been shitting themselves.
And like, then I like shut the door and I was like, ding, ding. And I'm like, hey, Rob, let's meet for a coffee. You know, so that was so keen.
Are you ready? Are you free tonight?
Yeah. And so I met them a couple of days later and I really liked the guys. I thought, geez, these are nice guys.
Yeah.
And I just helped them for a year. They would send me songs. I'd give some feedback. And then I started managing them probably after it was like, so I met them in July 2015. I went to their first ever show in August 2016. Horrendous, terrible, terrible, terrible show. Super nice guys. Definitely talent there somewhere, but I was like, it's too early.
Yeah.
So they improved out of sight from that point till August 2016.
Yep.
And they wrote a batch of songs that were really good. And I was like, okay, I've never managed a band, but I am looking for that next thing to do. let's give it a go. Yeah. So I started managing them in 2016. 2017, we signed a global record deal with BMG out of the US office. And to date, you know, they've had like 150 million streams. They had a song called Summer is a Curse that got to number four in France, number two in Switzerland, 12 in Germany.
International, man.
They played all the major music festivals around the world, Rockham Ring, Download Festival, Reading Festival.
Oh, they would have been like, do they shout you out on occasion?
Oh, they
like,
do. They're very sweet guys. I mean, it's incredible what they've achieved. Like COVID has been incredibly hard on them because they absolutely hit their peak in February 2020. They flew like for a one-off TV performance in Paris and got that done, got back, COVID hits. And then, you know, with Perth being so like strict with the border policy, they were really stuck here for 2 years. So we just did a huge sort of 10-week European tour and they were amazing.
Yeah.
And super talented guys.
Yeah.
So I feel very grateful to have managed them and it's been experiences of ups, downs. It hasn't been like, you know.
Smooth.
No, it has been like the hardest, probably the hardest job I've ever had.
Yeah.
No, definitely the hardest job I've ever had.
Wow.
And but incredibly rewarding because it's crazy when you think, okay, I saw these guys play their first show at HQ Leaderville and they've just sold a 1,000 capacity venue in Paris. It's amazing.
And it's only upwards from there if you keep putting in the work.
Yeah,
right?
It's quite amazing. And then the other band I manage is Red Hook. They're a band from Sydney, female fronted, heavy, rock, alternative, rap, weird.
Cool.
It's really good stuff. And they're a little older than the Fame and they're very clear on what it is they want and how they want to do things.
Yep.
And I love working with them. They are very – they bring challenges and ideas to me and I really like that because it forces me to try find solutions and
more naturally than anything.
And they're doing great. You know, Triple J has now put their last two singles full high rotation. They are playing this massive Good Things Festival on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. They did Groove in the Moo.
Yeah.
They've got their biggest headline tour ever coming up in April.
Oh, wicked.
They've got a great song coming out actually.
Yeah.
It's called Soju. Named after the like Korean or
the
Japanese
Bev.
And it comes out and I think it could be their biggest song. So that's what's great about podcasts. You can put it
shout
out there.
It out. Yeah.
You can put it out there. It'll be here for all eternity.
Yeah.
Soju, now great
it has
song.
To be. Yeah. Yeah.
It's got a great feature on it with another West Australian band and
awesome.
Yeah, so they're the two bands I manage. I don't want to manage any more bands. I've realized this
right
is
now.
Very hard.
Yeah.
and my plate is full. My cup runneth over.
Yeah. And, at least you know your limits. I think that is the issue, I suppose. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this because you said before you're a family man now.
Yep.
You've got goals, you know, running all those marathons overseas.
They take time.
Yeah, they do. And persistence and practice, you know, determination, all those buzzwords.
Guts.
Someone stop me.
Glory.
But I think I've lost my train of thought now.
Yeah.
Guts, glory.
Yeah.
I guess, the next steps for you. Before the next steps for you, having that commitment and the goals, the family, everything, like not juggling. I hate that word. I hate it when people say business owners juggle everything. And when you get overwhelmed, you reach breaking point burnout.
Yeah.
Overwhelm. And that's natural. That happens. If you're not sure how to manage it, you know, it only has to happen a few times before you start realizing, I can't do this. Not sustainable.
Yes, that's right.
Have you had any experiences or particular challenges where that has become a realization for you and you've gone, oh, I can't do this, or I have to say no to this, or it's changed the direction of what you've wanted to do or thought you were capable of?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the management thing with the Fame,
in
like probably 2018, 19, so they released their first song in 2018. They went straight into an 11-week sort of, you know, world tour, I guess you would call it, where they did like, it was like 6 weeks in Europe, 2 weeks in Australia, straight back into another 6 weeks in Europe, then a week in Australia. So All in a row. So I think it went for like 14 weeks. It was 55 shows.
Yeah.
All back to back. And they'd never toured. They'd never played a show outside of Perth before.
Oof.
You know, I was living in New York. So to prolong the tour support that the label was giving us and to just make sure that we could have a soft landing in the world of touring, I was the tour manager. So I went over. It was the four of them plus Mitch, their tech.
Yep.
And me, I was the tour manager, driver, helper, tech, just everything.
Everything
and I hadn't toured for a while, but I was excited because Gyroscope never really toured Europe. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited. We were like getting in the van again and, you know, I was like pumped up. I was like, what could go wrong? Everything went
famous
wrong.
Famous last words.
Yeah. I mean, it was really challenging because, you know, they were all like, I guess, 20, 21, young guys. Some of them
some
had
energy.
I think maybe one of them had never been on a plane before.
Oh,
or
wow.
Maybe not overseas. So yeah. It was hard. It was really hard. Mm. And I would say all of 2018 we had numerous issues with band members leaving and then the fallout from like how do you, you know, loop. We lost tours. We like lost multiple tours. And it really set the band back. So we were like all working twice as hard to try live up to the promise of the band. And at that point it was like it could just go straight down. By the end of 2018, it was also because I was traveling so much. I think I'd only been home like 4 or 5 months for that year because I was still coming back to the hen house. I was still playing in Gyroscope back then.
Oh, my gosh.
So sometimes I was flying back for one show because it'd be like a really good show and I didn't want to let the guys down.
Couldn't miss it.
So I was really at the end of my tether there. And then 2019 wasn't much better with like the travel. At least the fame sort of got through the dark times, started doing better. But yeah, just that heavy workload. I think that's why I like running so much.
Yeah.
Is because for me, what I really found was running is such a great way for me to just like listen to music. I typically try hard to listen to music, not podcasts when I'm running.
Yeah.
Because it sort of like creates space in my brain to not be thinking about work or for ideas to come to me. Mm-hmm. And so that became like a really nice outlet and was doing yoga twice a week with my buddy Jai.
Yeah.
And that really helped a lot. And then honestly, really like 18, 19, then straight into COVID, it was just like nonstop blur, management, studios, life, just crazy.
Coping,
it was really exhausting. And then COVID hit and I was like, I remembered what it was like to not like go to bed anxious because, you know, like what I think made actually, now you're really taking me back to this place now. I'm remembering why it was so hard. Was because with the fame, their key market ended up being Europe. So they got really lucky with a big song in Germany and then a big TV sync for a Jeep ad in France. And so because, you know, France, Germany from New York was 7 hours in front, UK was six hours in front or five and six. And so every morning by the time I woke up, there was just a whole bunch of asks and emails like, this radio station needs an ID. Can we organize an interview for that? So every day from, you know, if I was getting up at 6 a.m. to go for a run, it's already 1 p.m. in France. There's already just so much work.
Yeah.
And then that would be continuing throughout the day. And then it would kick off in the afternoon where LA would be coming online.
Right.
So like at 1 p.m., all the us, and LA was where our headquarter label was.
Yeah.
And this is all people doing what they should be doing, which is like just pushing hard for a band that's doing well. And then Australia would come online at like 5 p.m. So you were working with all these time zones. So you'd be doing calls throughout the day.
Yeah.
It was just very long days.
Oof.
And I just really, because it was the first client I'd ever managed, I really didn't want to, I wanted it to be successful.
Yeah.
So hopefully attract other management clients to show people that I could do it, to not let the fame guys down who were working so hard.
Yeah.
And but it was so COVID hit and honestly COVID was like a blessing in disguise in that sense. Terrible for the fame's career.
Of course,
in a way. And mine as well as a manager.
Yeah.
But it did give me time and space to just like chill out and relax.
Exhale.
And then I had so much time. It was unbelievable because, you know, like New York for the first couple of months was like pretty bad with COVID. And I really just had time to think about, what do I really want to do here, you know? And it was really cool. Like I started working on the hen house again. I started thinking about it. It was during that period of time that I thought, you know, maybe we should do a podcast studio and a DJ studio.
Thank goodness you did that.
It was cool. I'd like taught myself how to use Squarespace to build like a website.
Wow, yeah.
And I had to work out the booking system, how you can have people coming in from 1 to 4 that just – they get a unique set of codes. So like that was a whole thing.
Yeah.
So COVID was a real blessing in a way. And since then, honestly, like whilst it does go up and down, with, like management is still quite busy at times. I'm just trying to, just hold on to keeping space in my life because I find that I'm more creative when I'm not just under the pump all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And the ebbs and flows are quite natural. So something that I've learned from speaking to business owners for over a year now.
Yeah.
Is the creativity space that you allow yourself, you know, whether it's a Netflix day, you just need a couch potato day, whether it is, you know, taking that week off to go camping with your family, if you've got a family, if you're running a side hustle while you've got a full-time job, just knowing that that's not fully sustainable and yeah. making a plan,
yeah.
that time just is so valuable. And there's so much to back that up as well.
Yeah.
Like being artistic for 30 minutes a day is meant to help you in your strategic and logical sort of brain.
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah, and it's huge. But I also want to touch on the yeah. fact that you said before the running, well, the way you described it, it sounds like it was very much just for you, yourself,
yeah.
and yeah. running, you know, the management of the fame, running your, well, trying to keep up with your dreams and your aspirations yeah, for yeah. the hen house
yeah.
is very selfless in a way. Because although you get heaps of joy out of problem solving and the challenges that that comes with,
sure.
it is quite selfless to be like, I'm going to come back to watch your show because I want to be there to support you and show you that I'm here for you guys
yeah.
selflessly, even though I've got all this yes. stuff going on in the background.
Yeah.
And you could have easily been like, yeah, look, I'm just here for the business side of things. Oh, you yeah. guys get on with it.
Yeah, you can't do that.
What's the difference between someone who would do that and yeah. someone like you? Like, what do you think the ramifications are?
See,
and, yeah.
Sorry, I'm just like, because
the thoughts are running away.
I know exactly what you're saying yeah. here, but like, I was like a desperate musician.
Yeah.
Like, as desperate and as hungry as they come.
Right.
Like, and so were my bandmates. And yeah. that's why we succeeded, because we wanted it so badly.
Yeah.
Like, no one was like, you know, Gyroscope, our first year out. A year outside of high school, we played 110 shows just in Perth. So mm-hmm. that's like playing two shows every weekend for the yeah. whole year. We did it again in 2000, and then we were on track to do it again in 2001, but we took a break.
Yeah.
So we still played like 50. And then we played like wow. another 70 the year after that.
Yeah.
That was whilst we were rehearsing twice a week. So our work ethic was there, but without a great manager and without a selfless manager like Gyroscope had. Gyroscope had a manager named Ray Harvey,
mm-hmm.
and she was – I still think to this day she's like one of Australia's finest managers ever.
Wow.
I mean, she guided our career, but she also guided the Living End's career from like day one
yeah.
till she managed them for over 20 years. Wow. She managed Children Collide, 360, all these amazing artists. And we switched to her halfway through our career when we thought our best years were behind us. We're mm-hmm. like, we'd released two albums. We're like, I don't know, it might have passed us. We've worked so hard to get here.
Yeah.
And so it's very easy for me to be – what you would term as selfless, yeah. which I just don't really see it as selfless. I see it as more of like, that's what a good manager does.
Yeah.
Good manager has to be there for the band, because those people in the band, it's, I feel a sense of pressure to deliver for them, because they're really putting their hopes, dreams and aspirations in your hands mm-hmm. to a certain degree. They still have to write the songs.
Yeah.
But what I've like seen over time here more than anywhere is that great songs, obviously it's number one.
Yeah.
But you need someone that can then market and manage and network and create yeah. the opportunities for those songs.
Yeah.
So I am like, you know, that's why I can't even take on any more management, because it does take a lot.
Yeah.
And honestly, my band, the band's like, oh man, if you did an interview with the bands I manage, gosh, they would probably be like, we, you know, I would imagine they're like, we love Rob. He's, you know, he's great, but damn, he can be like stressed out. He can be a bit of a taskmaster. He's like, because I am very driven when I yeah. put my mind to something.
Yeah.
And I always say to the bands that like, if the manager wants it more than the artist, there's a big problem.
Yeah, guys.
So I haven't
yeah.
had to really say that very often, once or twice.
Yeah.
But no, I do work hard for them, because I see myself in that position.
Yeah.
Like 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to squeeze the most out of the opportunity.
Well, yeah, because in music it doesn't go for long. But if you can creak the door open and walk through it like yep. Ray Harvey did for Gyroscope, then you can save some money
yeah.
and potentially have another sort of career. Like,
ta-da, yeah.
you know, it's all like, you know, the songs I wrote down here when it was R&R, you know, we released as Gyroscope,
yep.
that eventually earned me enough income to like, you know, not live off $250
yeah.
a week and not be on the dole, but to save money. And then yeah. I was able to save for like 3.5 years, and then buy, with the money that I'd saved from Gyroscope, from the songs we wrote in here, I bought this studio.
Yeah, now
so
look at
it. So it's just this whole circle. Yeah. And then the next major thing was managing a band that I discovered at the studio that had never played a show before. You
That's
know, so
crazy, yeah.
everything has come back to music, treating it with respect, believing it, having good people around you, good yeah. managers, good staff that run the studios. So thank you for listening to my TED Talk.
I feel like there's so much to take out of that. If you are someone who's starting a journey in any of those avenues, it's so clear how passionate you are, and it's like, it's so awesome to hear that as well, because things get really hard, and if you know it's not for you, you know when you need to pivot, hopefully.
Yeah.
And if you know that you really, really, really want it, it's that like hunger.
Yeah.
To
yeah,
get
yeah.
actually like go for it. Yeah. Super and important.
I mean, what I always like, because I chat to so many bands down here over the years, like, you know, just talking about their journey, and they'll ask me questions. And
yeah.
I think the good way to look at these things with like a band is a good example, but a business too is, and I did this with management, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because it got to a point with like managing the Fame where I'd done it for like 16, 17, 18, and really had seen like very little financial reward at that point.
Yeah.
Which isn't why I was doing it, but it was getting to the point where I was like, well, we're 3 years deep and we've like, you know, not really seen anything here. I told myself, rightly or wrongly, that I was getting an amazing education.
Yeah.
And I really was, because up until that point, I'd been in a band and then I had the studios. It really forced me to learn how to like network again, to put myself out there on behalf of a client that no one knew. So it's like cold emails, cold calls, emailing managers. Hey, you know, Sleeping with Sirens are touring Australia, the Fame, the similar sounding band. Yep. Do you think we could do the support? We'll do this, we'll do that. So it, sometimes I think, you know, when you're thinking about starting a business or a new venture, it could be a new job. It's like, think about the things you're going to learn, even if it totally fails.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what like sort of gave me peace to like go on that whole journey of management. Cause I was like, well, you know, already, you know, we've signed a major label deal in the US, we're touring the world, we're doing this. I've just learned how to keep a band on the road for 14 weeks, do the budgets, spreadsheets. I don't really know how to use spreadsheets before then.
Yeah.
You know, because I went straight out of uni, then I was in a band, and then I was running the studios. Now I'm like, I love my spreadsheets. And
yeah.
I know it sounds like such a small little thing, but it's no, like
it is,
these are all the wins that you should like think about that you probably don't think about when you're just looking at it in binary terms of will it be successful, will it not?
Yeah.
There's this whole gray area that can be wonderful and colorful in its own right.
Yeah, and the expansion of knowledge that you get and skills. Yeah. I really love that note that we've left it on. I can't believe we've been talking for 1 hour. I feel like I've got so many more questions. Quick. We're going to have to do a part two for sure because I'd love to hear more about your journey overseas and what that brought to your knowledge and skill set as well. So I think you made some awesome points. So I call it selflessness, but
you
call it
some great questions.
Resonation.
Great questions.
Stop it. We could go for ages. It's cool to hear the passion and the fact that you resonate with the people that you work with so closely that it works.
Yeah.
It just works.
Well, it seems to at the moment, but you know, touch wood, just keeps going. And hey, honestly, straight back at you. Great having you here. Mm. So passionate. Hearing the podcast, our podcast power user number one right here.
I love that.
And that's why it's great. Like, you know, I enjoy your podcast and it's so nice to be on it.
Yeah.
And, wishing you all the best as well. This is great. And, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Great, thanks, Taryn, so much for coming on and for being in Perth for this as well. Yeah. I was trying to figure out how to Skype this.
Great. And we got to film it and all of this.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I'm wicked. So good luck with it all.
Thank you so much. And you too as well. I can't wait to see what it grows into.
Great. Massively. Great. Yes. Melbourne.
Awesome. Yes.
That'll be the next step, hopefully.
Do you want to give people a little sort of do you want to give yourself a little plug on how people can keep up with the future of the Hen House?
Yeah.
We did mention very briefly that you are expanding into Melbourne.
Yeah.
We've got some Melbourne listeners, so shout out to you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if you're in other states as well.
Yeah.
Watch the space, potentially.
Watch the space, for sure.
How do people keep on track with what you guys are doing and progressing? What channels are you on?
Yeah, honestly, the best is Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Just we're really active on there. Mm-hmm. For user guides and all of that stuff, we do Instagram Reels and TikToks as well.
So helpful.
And that's Rowan that really does a lot of that stuff. But yeah, Instagram's great. Facebook's fine. And then our website's great. And, you know, if you're up for it, sign up to our mailing list. We put a mail out every single week where all we're really doing is sharing some helpful tips, whether it's you're a podcaster, DJ, rehearsal, there's some tips in there for you. It's interesting articles we find in and around the industry that we just send you. There's no real spam. There's no like hard sell. It's just a way to like, again, trying to keep in touch with people, educate, share the knowledge, you know, and just try and keep people excited about the studio. As a matter of fact, one cool story I should tell you quickly is we had a couple of the guys from Guns N' Roses in yesterday, which is pretty crazy.
That's insane.
I know.
How did you facilitate that?
Well, like, I didn't do anything. I mean.
I sat back.
They went to the henhouse.com.au where people should go as well. No, but no, the agent So the promoter is Paul Dainty, who's putting on that tour.
Yeah.
Paul Dainty's assistant called me a couple of days ago and was like, hi, I'm on your website. I work for Paul Dainty. You know, it looks amazing. I want room 3. Can I get room 3 like in 2 days' time? And I was like, oh, gosh, I'll have a look at the booking system. I said, we're fully booked. She goes, she's like, really? Is there anything you can do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, not really. I mean, we're booked, you know. She's like, well, I want to take it all day. I said, yeah, well, we booked for like two out of the 3 sessions in that room.
Yeah.
I could try to put you in another room for the day. And she was like being very skittish about what it was about. She wouldn't tell me because I was like, well, she's like, could I pay the band that's in that room to not rehearse? And because the band really wants to rehearse in that room. That's your big room, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's that big room. So she's asking all these questions. I was thinking, gosh.
What's going on? Yeah.
And then she's like, I'll ask my boss if I can tell you who the band is. And I was like, hello here. What's going on here? And then she called back and she said, I can pay you, you know, I can pay you like $200 to the band for them to give up their room.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I can pitch that to the band.
Yeah, for sure.
I said, it would be helpful to know who the band is. She goes, no, I'm not allowed to tell you that. So then I started like doing some Googling. I was like, Guns N' Roses are playing on the Friday in Perth. I was like, surely not. It wasn't all of them, but a couple of them came down. Duff McKagan was the bass player, was absolutely wonderful, lovely guy. cool. And, yeah, speaking of like that idea of like, you know, where you light up, you know, like people light up when they come into the space, and I think it's all the murals, it's the branding, it's all those little things.
Yeah.
But it was so cool. Like here's like, you know, I was really nervous. You know, the like, you know, the tour manager was like, all right, they're leaving the hotel now. They'll be there in 20 minutes. Then I was like, you know, they're going to be here in 3 minutes. Are you ready? And I'm like, yes, I'm ready. And I was like, I still didn't know who it was.
Yeah. At that point. You were just
gear
expecting.
Had been dropped off. And right. So I knew it was Guns N' Roses, but I didn't know who. And then Duff walks out. And he was like, all business. It's like, hey, how you doing? Shake hand and then walk into the room.
You're like, they're all sweating profusely.
You know, make sure
you.
That everything's okay in the room. Yeah. And he's looking around. He's like, man, this room is great. He's like, wow. He's like, who does your murals? He's
You've made this.
Is great. I was like, thanks, Duff. Yeah, I really appreciate that, mate. You know,
buddy.
Yeah, we were just chatting for a bit. And then I was like, do you want a water? You know, he's like, oh, have you got some water? I said, yeah. So I got everyone around of waters and we're just chatting. They went and jammed. They were like practicing the Guns N' Roses set.
Yeah.
Like it was basically Frank the drummer and Duff just going through the whole set. And I said to them, I was like, guys, so, you know, what brings you to the studio? They're like, oh, you know, we just want to tighten up the set. You know, it was a few little things in Singapore. We just want to tighten it up so it's just perfect. And I was like, wow, unbelievable. Like these guys get a couple of days off on tour and they're coming to rehearse and practice the set.
What better like, place to do it, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course I would say that. But I really admired it. You know, I was like, it was so cool. And then they had a break and he was like, you know, do you have coffee? And I'm like, yeah, we got coffee. It's instant coffee. He goes, yeah, that's fine.
Oh.
So we went, put the kettle on. Me and Duff are standing around the kitchen, had a cup of coffee each, sat down on the bench. He's telling me his life story. Yeah. He was asking me about mine. It was very cool. I mean, to have like Guns N' Roses down here at the Hen House.
I'd
was
lose
like,
my mind.
I caramba. Yeah. And then at the end, I was like, Duff, Frank, can I get a photo? They're like, oh, yeah, sure. I gave them Hen House t-shirts.
Yeah, of course.
And then I got a photo with them.
Yeah.
Jake is like the head of security for Duff.
Yeah.
He took the photo. And then Duff's like, hey, Jake, get a photo with my phone. I'm going to chuck it up on Instagram. He hasn't, but then he got
like,
a photo.
Hey, buddy, just that, just reminding
but
you.
But he asked me.
Tag me.
This is what jogged me to think about this. He asked me, he's like, do you have an Instagram that I can tag in? I'm like,
stop.
At the Hen House, just chuck it in on that. He's like, okay.
Yeah, like maybe my personal one too, just for my personal circle.
Yeah, but he was lovely. I mean, it was, you know, a little momentary brush. And then as he was leaving, he was like, do you want to come to the show? And I actually go to the show on Friday. I said, I can't go on Friday, but I could go to the Melbourne show. And he's like, fine, just text Ron. Ron's the tour manager who was there. Ron's like, text me, we'll sort it out. So very nice perk of the rehearsal studio and, you know, creating a brand and something that stands out online and in real life. So it was very cool.
A reward for the efforts,
yeah,
I feel.
Yeah, it was like, cool.
That's so wicked. That's so cool.
So there's
look
my
you.
Non-humble,
community is
non-humble
like,
brag. Yeah, that's what
little
that is.
The community's not so little. It's Guns N' Roses.
I
huge.
Know, yeah. So we got a Polaroid. He's going up on the Polaroid.
I was going to say,
wall.
I was like, I'm going to race there straight after this if it's in there. But not yet.
But, we've run out of Velcro dots. So
bummer.
As soon as we get that, it's going up there.
It's the small details.
Yeah.
Someone's got to be across it.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Thank you for the stories. I feel like we could just, round two is definitely going to happen.
I'm glad I remembered that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. That is a great story, and it's so pertinent to the timing as well. So
yeah,
awesome.
Thank you, Taryn. Thanks, it's been Rob. Lovely.
Yeah.
Good luck with your podcast.
Thank you.
Great.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Perth Business Podcast. If there's anyone that you specifically want to hear from or you think would be great on the podcast, send us a DM on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. Or you can email us at theperthbusinesspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you here next time.